science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to another episode of ThinkWorks, the place where we like to do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week we're going to continue with our look at Eastern and Indian philosophy. And last week I spoke about the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path. And I alluded to what it was about. It's a particular theme within Buddhism. But it's so fascinating. I thought, do you know what? Let's just do an episode on that. And that's exactly what we're going to do. So without further ado, let's just get straight to it. It's a concept that not only laid the foundation for Buddhist practice, but they resonate with some of the other Indian and Eastern philosophies as well. So let's look at the first of those, the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths are as following. The truth of suffering, or dukkha, is all life involves suffering or dissatisfaction. The second noble truth is the truth of the cause of suffering, which is called samudaya, which is suffering that is caused by desire or an attachment. The third noble truth, the truth of the end of suffering, or nirada, is suffering can be overcome and happiness attained. And then the fourth one is the path, the truth of the path, or magga, which is the truth leading to the cessation of suffering. I hope I'm pronouncing these terms correctly. I'm doing my best, but we'll see if we can persevere as we go along. So a more detailed explanation then. Let's have a look. So dukkha, which is the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, discusses how life's impermanence and inevitability of change can lead to dissatisfaction. It's a sentiment that's also reflected in the Hindu concept of maya, which is illusion and the transient nature of the world. Samudaya, which is the second noble truth, the truth of the cause of suffering, that explores craving and attachment as sources of suffering. So it parallels then with desires that are emphasized in many Indian philosophies as hurdles really to spiritual growth. The third noble truth, or Nirodha, that talks about achieving cessation, and that resonates with moksha in Hinduism, and it's that liberation from the cycle of rebirth. The fourth noble truth, or the Magga, that introduces the Noble Eightfold Path as a way to achieve liberation from suffering. So we need to really understand the core teachings there. So if we look at the Four Noble Truths as Buddhism's essential framework for understanding the existential realities of life, then we can see that these truths not only diagnose the fundamental issue of human existence, which is suffering, but they also provide a practical guide to overcoming it. So again, if we look at the explanation of the truth of suffering, the dukkha, it encompasses all forms of suffering, including physical pain, emotional distress, existential anxiety. It acknowledges that dissatisfaction permeates life due to impermanence and uncertainty and the inevitability of change. And if you want to look at it in terms of a story, because Eastern Indian philosophies are really great at telling stories to illustrate the points, you can look at the story of the Buddha's life with the story of Siddhartha Gautama, or the Buddha, whose journey towards enlightenment began with his realization of suffering. Despite living in luxury, he had encounters with sickness, old age, and death, and that revealed the pervasive nature of suffering, prompting his quest for understanding and liberation. That leads us to the second truth, as we said, the cause of suffering, which is the Samudaya. And if you look at that as the recognition that suffering arises from taha, or craving and attachment, as we said, this includes all the desires for pleasure and material possessions, and even attachments to ideas and concepts. If you look at the parable of King Yayati in the Mahabharata, King Yayati is cursed to premature old age and seeks youth to enjoy worldly pleasures. Even after exchanging youth with his son, he finds desires unquestionable, and that illustrates how cravings actually are the things that lead us to continuous suffering. That leads us to the third noble truth, the end of suffering, which is the Nirodha. And that's really the realization that liberation from suffering is possible only by relinquishing attachment, thus achieving Nirvana, a state of profound peace and enlightenment. And that actually is a concept that's captured within Hindu philosophy with the concept of moksha. The parallels of the Hindu pursuit of moksha, liberation from the samsara, the cycle of rebirth, are achieved by overcoming ignorance and detachment from maya, the illusion, and ultimately uniting with the universal spirit Brahman. And that is where the Buddhist path is taking us. That is the truth of the path, in fact, the Marga. This leads us into the Noble Eightfold Path, which lays out the systematic steps towards overcoming suffering and achieving enlightenment. So within Chinese philosophy, you've got the Wu Wei, the Taoist path, the Taoist path. So while distinct, the Taoism's principle of Wu Wei, effortless action, resonates with that Eightfold Path because it emphasizes natural harmony with the universe, aligning actions with the Tao, the way, thus achieving balance and minimizing suffering. So we can see how these truths not only encapsulate the essence of Buddhist insight into the human condition, but also echoing broader Eastern and Indian philosophical contexts, and they offer therefore that timeless guide for understanding and alleviating suffering. Now all that leads to the Noble Eightfold Path. So the first step in these systematic approaches to enlightenment. So you have right understanding, and that's recognizing the nature of reality in the path to transformation. And that's akin in achieving self-awareness in multiple philosophical traditions. The second step is right intention. So commitment to ethical and mental self-improvement, which is similar to the resolve emphasized in yoga's ethical precepts or the yamas. The third step is the right speech. So practicing non-harmful communication, and that resonates really with the emphasis on truth and non-harm found in Jainism, which I think it's the non-harm path is called Azimasa. The fourth step is right action, which is ethical conduct promoting non-exploitation, and that parallels really the principles found in Confucianism, which focuses on harmony and righteousness. The fifth step is right livelihood, so earning a living in a way that does not harm others, and that's echoed in Taoism's advocacy for living harmoniously with the world. The sixth step is right effort, which is cultivating positive states, parallels with Indian practices of discipline, the tapas, that foster positive transformation. The seventh step is right mindfulness, which develops awareness reflecting the mindfulness practices also found in yoga and Zen Buddhism, which emphasizes focused presence. The final step in the Noble Eightfold Path, step 8, is right concentration, and that's developing the ability to focus the mind comparable to meditative practices across many Eastern traditions, including Hindu and Jain meditation. So let's take a look at that in a little bit more detail then. The Noble Eightfold Path serves as a practical guide to end suffering and achieving Nirvana. And each component is both a self-improvement tool and a moral compass, and that resonates deeply with various other philosophical traditions as well. So let's go into a little bit more detail. So we got the first step, as we said, is the right understanding, or the Samadhi. It recognizes really the true nature of reality and understanding the Four Noble Truths and the nature of impermanence and interconnectedness. So an example of that would be the story of Rahula. In Buddhist texts, the Buddha teaches his son Rahula to see the reality of life as it is, and encourages him to understand the transient nature of all things, and that's a direct call, therefore, to right understanding. The right intention, the second step, the Sammasankappa, that cultivates intentions of renunciation and goodwill and harmlessness, and it moves away from desires and ill will. So the yamas of yoga, for example, in the Yoga Sutras, they have the ethical precepts that guide practitioners to cultivate ethical intentions similar to the right intention, such as asima, which is non-violence, and satya, which is truthfulness. The third step, right speech, the samavaka, that is practicing speech that is truthful, harmonious, gentle, and purposeful, and it avoids false, divisive, harsh, or idle speech. And a lot of our politicians in the world could really do with learning that lesson right now. Just an aside. An example that would be the Mahavira's teachings, which emphasize asima, which is the non-violence in thoughts, words, and actions, promoting speech that causes no harm, a crucial aspect of right speech. The fourth step, right action, samakamanta, which is basically conducting oneself in a way which is moral and non-exploitative, and abstaining from harm, theft, and sexual misconduct. And in Confucian ethics, for example, that advocates for ethical behavior and righteous actions to achieve harmony in society, mirroring the essence of right action within the Buddhist practices. The fifth step, right livelihood, the sama ayiva, is basically engaging in work that does not exploit or harm others and chooses occupations, therefore, that are ethically aligned with spiritual principles. Close example of that would be the Taoist balance, the idea of balance within Taoism, which emphasizes living in harmony with the world, advocating for livelihoods that support natural and social balance, and that's similar to right livelihood. The sixth one, right effort, or the Samyavayama, that is cultivating a positive mindset and diligently working to overcome unwholesome states while fostering healthy ones. And that's very similar to tapas in Hinduism, which is, tapas refers to discipline, an effort to transcend negative habits and cultivate virtues which resemble the right effort step in the Noble Eightfold Path. The seventh step, right mindfulness, the samasati, is about developing awareness of body, feelings, mind and phenomena, and promoting moment-to-moment conscious engagement. And that is basically what is Zen Buddhism teaches. It focuses intensely on present awareness and mindfulness in every action and parallels the practice of right mindfulness very, very closely. And finally, the eighth step, which is the right concentration, which is sama samadhi. And that develops, it's about developing really a deep focus and meditation to cultivate peace and insight, often through practices like meditation. And you get a lot of these kind of meditative practices in Jainism, where Jain monks practice dhyana or meditation to achieve concentration and spiritual insights, which is basically akin to this idea of the right concentration. So each component of the Noble Eightfold Path serves as that guideline to ethical and mental development. And these principles are not just Buddhist ideas, but also reflect universal themes across Eastern philosophies, offering a practical wisdom for a harmonious life. So if we delve a little bit deeper then into those parallels between the Noble Eightfold Path and other Indian and Eastern philosophies, we can look at some specific stories and examples within that, I think, to really make the point. In Hinduism, with Dharma and ethical conduct, we've got Dharma in Hinduism refers to the moral law governing individual conduct, emphasizing duty, righteousness, and living in harmony with universal principles. So the example there would be the Bhagavad Gita. This is a text that illustrates the concept of Dharma through Arjuna's dialogue with Krishna. In the face of battle, Arjuna learns that adhering to one's duty, or Dharma, leads to spiritual growth, a concept that's echoed in the ethical paths of the Eightfold Path. The pursuit of moksha, on the other hand, is the ultimate goal of liberation from samsara, the cycle of rebirth, and it's similar to attaining nirvana in Buddhism by ending suffering. An example of that would be Adi Shankaracharya's philosophy in his teachings on Advaita Vedanta, expound the realization of the self as Brahman, which leads to moksha, which reflects the Buddhist aim of liberating oneself from ignorance and desire. In Jainism, the principle of Ashama and Satya and Aparigara emphasizes non-violence, truthfulness, and non-possessiveness. These are principles that align with the ethical commitments of the Eightfold Path. And the Life of Mariavra text recounts the practice of Ahimsa, which strives to cause no harm to any living being. His dedication to Satya and Aparigara complements the Buddhist ideals of right speech and right livelihood. And in Taoism, with the concept of Wu Wei, this just means effortless action or aligning with the natural flow of life, minimizing conflict and forcing energy. So in the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu's teaching on Tao Te Ching emphasizes living in harmony with the Tao, or the Way, comparable to following the natural and balanced path as advocated in Buddhism and reflected in various elements of the Eightfold Path. Confucianism has also got its own versions of the Eightfold Path in many ways. So the virtues of harmony and conduct within Confucianism emphasizes virtue like Li, the ritual propriety, and Ren, benevolence, aiming for societal harmony and ethical conduct. An example of that is the Analects of Confucius himself. So Confucius advocates for harmonious living through proper conduct and relationships, which is akin to Buddhist right action. His belief in upright character and fair governance aligns with the right livelihood. So in conclusion, if we look at how these philosophical traditions, despite their unique context and expressions, share common themes with Buddhism, we can actually collectively emphasize the whole idea of ethical living, self-reflection, spiritual liberation, and this, all of it really reinforces that universal pursuit of understanding and harmony in life. So these ancient teachings continue to offer relevant guidance, I think, in addressing personal and societal challenges today. And I would encourage listeners really to consider these paths and philosophies not just as historical teachings, but as practical guides for modern living. I'm certainly, one thing that this has definitely created in me is an interest in Buddhism. I'm definitely going to be reading a lot more about the beliefs and how they can be related to modern day life in particular. And I would encourage you to find your own path within that as well and see what interests you the mostly that's come out of this. Doing that, I never really ever set homework in these podcasts, but if I was, I would say yes, choose which of these different paths that we've discussed in the last three episodes of ThinkWorks on Eastern and Indian philosophy and ask yourself some reflective questions. How do these teachings resonate with your own personal experiences, and what steps might you take towards a more mindful and ethical life? And I invite listeners to share your thoughts and feedback on how you might integrate these principles into your daily lives by going to the forum. You knew this was coming, didn't you? I have a forum, which is darreninform.com/thinkworksforum. There's always a post for each episode that we do. This episode will be no exception. I'm going to go answer those questions I've asked you, and I'm going to put my answers in that post as well. And I really hope that you guys will do the same, that you'll tell me which path you think is most interesting and how they can be related to those two questions, which were, again, I'll just repeat them for you. How do these teachings resonate with your own personal experiences, and what steps might you take towards a more mindful and ethical life? That's the end of this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be doing another episode on Indian and Eastern philosophies very, very soon, and we're going to look at the, I think, initially the nature of reality and how that compares with the Western allegory of the cave and all and that kind of thinking. And there's some deep differences in the intent between the answers that are sought, I think, between Western and the Eastern Indian philosophies. So come and join me for that. In the meantime, everyone, take care, keep asking questions, come and join me in the forum, and I'll see you next week.
Would like to find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for at Darren Inform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to Think Works, the podcast for thinkers.